Freemasonry came to Canada long before there was a Canada, and from its inception, it was based upon moral individuals who believed in brotherhood. The first lodge meeting in Ontario was at Newark, now Niagara-on-the-Lake. Lieutenant Colonel John Graves Simcoe had just led refugees from the American Revolution to their new home in the wilderness. Joseph Brant, the Mohawk warrior chief, might well have been with them, as he and his people were similarly disinherited. The settlers, mainly of Irish, Scottish, and English stock, were eager to embrace masonry in the New World as part of their heritage from the Old Country. Military units from the British Isles were also posted in the New World. They carried their lodge warrants, issued in Dublin, Edinburgh, and London, and their Masonic regalia from camp to camp. When the colonists joined them as militia volunteers, they were welcomed into the social life of the unit, which included the meetings of the military or traveling Masonic lodges. This was the case both in early Canada and in the United States. Some soldiers went back home across the Atlantic, but not all of them. Others remained in Upper Canada after the American Revolution, taking land grants as payment for their military service. Along with colonists, they continued the Masonic tradition, establishing the first non-military lodges in what is now Ontario. No one knows for sure, but most scholars agree that Freemasonry had its beginnings in medieval Europe. Skilled but illiterate workmen moved from village to village. They were, of course, stonemasons, the operative craftsmen, who became builders of stone fortresses and magnificent cathedrals. On large projects, a great number of masons were needed. Since they were strangers in the village, they lived apart and had their own compound. They took meals together and slept under the same roof. Those craftsmen would assemble in their lodgings to discuss problems and plan the next day's work. It was natural that a social order would arise under these circumstances, not dissimilar to an officer's mess, combining camaraderie and the recognition of rank. The word lodge is interesting. We take it to mean a building where a fraternal group meets, or the actual group itself. Dictionaries offer the following meanings: hotel, main building in a summer resort, a house occupied during the fishing or hunting season, gatekeeper's or gardener's house, and the home of a beaver or otter. In medieval days, long-term projects resulted in more permanent lodgings, which were referred to by the masons simply as the lodge. We think this was where the two meanings melded, the living quarters and fraternal gathering. Castles took decades to build. As the landlords grew wealthier, their strongholds grew larger, and the armies or retinue of knights increased. Cathedrals took centuries to complete. Like modern homes, both required additions and the older parts needed maintenance. This kept some stonemasons employed, but not many. So after the work was finished, like the engineers and pipeline layers of today, they traveled in search of new projects. The demand for master masons was high. As skilled artists, they could negotiate a good contract, somewhat like hockey players and baseball stars do today. They carried their skills in their head and their tools in a bag. However, there were no government apprenticeship programs, certificates of graduation, nor letters of recommendation, because only the priests and clerks could read or write. How could an employer know he was getting a workman who was truly skilled? With all these itinerant workers, there had to be some system of keeping track. Enter the craft guilds, those precursors of the trade unions and the professional associations, and enter the Masonic Lodge. The itinerant brothers faced the usual perils of the roads, which included robbery and murder, because those were lawless days and people were desperate. They passed through many settlements on their way to the next cathedral or castle, usually arriving hungry and in need of shelter. What could be more natural than seeking out a fellow craftsman and asking for help? Tradition tells us that this is the origin of Masonic hospitality, the hand of friendship to a fellow traveler. And when they arrived at their destination, their fellow craftsmen would help them find work because they were in a position to help. But what if the traveler was a phony? Back as far as the Old Testament, passwords were used to get people through military lines. And if anyone suggests the concept is archaic or quaint, just remind them that they get into computer programs with a password and into bank accounts with a PIN number. Our ancient brethren carried a password to gain access to a worksite, the same way we today carry a password to gain access to a lodge. Like your PIN number, it's a secret and not lightly shared. In a tough world, those masons held together. They had to because as traveling men, they were far removed from their families and their home villages. If a man was killed on the job, his fellow masons cared for his widow and reared his children. It was a type of social insurance before the world was ready for it. They looked out for each other, on the job and off. And when the divine right of kings was used as an excuse for tyranny, the masons held a belief that all men were created equal. As feudalism gave way to the current nation status, masons became less itinerant. Villages no longer needed defenses. Construction moved to the cities where factories were needed because of the development of world trade. To accommodate this growth, new houses were needed. The stonemasons settled down and established roots, and their lodges became permanent fixtures. As skilled craftsmen, they were paid high wages and became part of the emerging middle class. Their neighbors couldn't help but notice that they had a pretty good time and a good way of life. And the question arose, can we join too? The answer was yes. And that started the evolution of Masonic lodges from the shapers of stone to the shapers of men. Today, many organizations accept associate members, applicants who agree with the club's ideals and activities. In masonry, those who did the stonework were called operative masons, and those who associated with them were called speculative masons or freemasons. That, my friend, is who we were. I hope it explains to you who we are. Like our ancient brethren, we do not seek members. If someone wants to know something about us, we tell him. If he likes what he hears, he might want to join our ranks. Some things in masonry have changed through the ages. Others remain firm. We call them landmarks. One of them is that a mason must believe in a supreme being. He must press for the same justice for his neighbors as he expects for himself. These things never change. For more information, please talk to your friend or view the friend-to-friend video, Freemasonry in Ontario.